Welcome to episode 20 of Coaster Redux, if you can believe that. My name is Eric, and I'm a lifelong roller coaster enthusiast, but up until lately, I've been kind of a lazy one. For years, I'd all but forgotten my roller coaster obsession from high school and college. Then during the pandemic, I started following the coaster world again, and for the last 2 years, I've been on a mission to ride as many new coasters as I can. This is the story of my revived roller coaster fandom, and after completing my second roller coaster road trip back in September, I wanted to sneak in one more adventure before year's end. The week after Thanksgiving is typically one of the best times to visit year-round theme parks, and I set my sights on Southern California. I spent the last 2 days at Six Flags Magic Mountain sampling their record-breaking roller coaster collection. While I enjoyed the likes of Wonder Woman, Full Throttle, Twisted Colossus, and X2, I was ready for a change of pace from the Six Flags brand after visiting six of their parks in 2023. My next stop would be Knott's Berry Farm, a park I briefly visited back in 2006 when I was in town for a wedding. It's known for its old western charm despite being surrounded by the urban grid of Buena Park, California. They've also got some pretty awesome roller coasters, the new Hangtime Gerstlauer Infinity Coaster, the recently reopened Accelerator, and the modern classic wood coaster Ghost Rider. I know as a roller coaster fan that one of my favorite parts of the hobby is getting the reaction of somebody coming off a ride they've never ridden before. That's what I want to share with you. And with that, join me for a relaxing day to end my Cali trip as I roll into Knott's Berry Farm on Coaster Redux.
Lap bars, hands up high, brakes off, dispatch ready, go. Coaster Redux.
The sun had long since risen when I awoke the next morning. LA traffic is no joke, so I opted to sleep in, miss the rush, and arrive about an hour after rope drop. Plus, it's a Monday morning in December. I can't imagine the place will be too crowded, right? The forecast called for another perfect weather day in SoCal, so this time I ditched the joggers and opted for shorts since I knew I wouldn't stay at Knott's past dark. I departed my hotel in Santa Clarita and was treated to the skyline view of Six Flags Magic Mountain one final time as I merged onto the 5 to head back south. I know I'll be back. The 53-mile drive was shown to be just over an hour, and I barely touched the brakes on this relatively peaceful ride back to the sprawling City of Angels. My standout memory from my last visit to Knott's was Accelerator, the world's first intamin hydraulic launch coaster. The ride had been closed for over a year as the park waited on replacement parts. Rumors had been circulating that Cedar Fair would not reopen the coaster due to the problems they faced with its newer and larger cousin, Top Thrill Dragster at Cedar Point. Then in early November, the internet exploded with the news that one of the world's quickest launches was back in action. This news prompted me to pull the trigger and book this trip, and I'm so glad I did. My second most anticipated coaster was Ghost Rider, the CCI wood twister that's been the marquee attraction at Knott's since its debut. I remembered a long wait for the ride and that I really liked it. Since my last visit, Ghost Rider has received a complete overhaul from GCI, and enthusiasts rave about it. I couldn't wait to check it out for myself. Then finally there's Hangtime, the newest roller coaster at Knott's. This would be my first infinity coaster from Gerstlauer. It's a compact ride with a beyond vertical drop and inversions galore. Combine these rides with the quality experience Cedar Fair is known for, and I was ready to get out of the car and take my time rediscovering this revered theme park. As I exited the 5, the 325-foot Supreme Scream was visible along with Accelerator's top hat. I then descended the exit ramp to find myself cruising down Beach Boulevard, a 6-lane suburban thoroughfare flanked by hotels, strip malls, movie theaters, and the like. From this vantage point, you would never know there was a theme park just a few blocks away. After a few lengthy traffic lights, I bore right at the entrance sign. Grand Avenue stretches straight ahead southbound while Beach Boulevard zags to the left. It's as if this road was always supposed to go this way, because in 1923, it did. This used to be the main route connecting Los Angeles and Huntington Beach. Knott's Berry Farm began as a roadside stand selling jams, pies, and berries, most notably the boysenberry, which they helped pioneer. As its popularity grew, owners Walter and Cordelia Knott opened a tea room that eventually began serving fried chicken to passers-by. Lines for Mrs. Knott's chicken dinner restaurant grew so long that the family sought out ways to entertain those waiting guests. Daughter Virginia started selling knickknacks outside, and the park's main gift shop still bears her name. The family then began building Ghost Town, a tribute to the abandoned mining town of Calico, California, which the Knotts had purchased and restored. Over the years, the roadside stand grew into a full-fledged theme park, and the city of Buena Park grew up around it. The Knotts sold the park to Cedar Fair in 1997, hoping the chain would be able to infuse capital to compete with nearby Disney, Universal, and Six Flags, all while preserving the legacy they had built. Knott's Berry Farm is now completely landlocked, surrounded by a mostly residential neighborhood, as well as bustling businesses lining Beach Boulevard. Still, the second I crossed onto park property, it was as if I had entered a separate world. The parking lot is accessed by passing through a tunnel beneath Beach Boulevard, but I missed it on the first time around because of confusing traffic signage and the fact that I was dropped off on my last visit, so I didn't have to park. I drove the length of Grand Avenue, passing Virginia's and the chicken restaurant, then beneath the towering wood structure of Ghost Rider. Confused, I drove around the block again, and this time found myself in a lengthy line to enter the main parking lot. What was going on here? How could this place be so utterly jammed on a Monday in December? I figured it would be, you know, a ghost town. Magic Mountain wasn't even open during the week. After about 10 minutes, I finally parked and began the walk towards the gate, which had opened about an hour prior. I glanced up and saw a train cresting the 205-foot top hat on accelerator. It's getting real. I passed through the tunnel again and emerged onto the charming sidewalk, home to Knott's California Marketplace, the chicken restaurant, and the park's main gate. It's got an old southwestern look, and it's relatively small. The red and yellow Cobra roll of the Silver Bullet B&M inverted coaster towers above the front gate. It's not a gatekeeper at Cedar Point moment by any means, but it definitely sets the tone. Security lines stretched far beyond the ticket booths, and I prepared myself for a surprisingly busy day in the park. I scanned my Cedar Fair pass that I bought before going to Carowinds on the return leg of my road trip. That's now 2 bonus park days before the start of 2024, and I'll be using it again during the summer. Once I passed through the metal detectors, I turned right and entered Fiesta Village, the Mexican-themed area of the park, and I noticed that all of a sudden, the place felt empty. I'm guessing that the small entrance creates a bottleneck even on lighter days, so hopefully the crowds won't be too bad. Anyway, I made my way through to the back right-hand side of the park. My destination? Of course it was Accelerator. Every enthusiast knows that these Intamin launched coasters are prone to downtime, so if you see it's open, you gotta ride it first. I exited Fiesta Village and crossed into the boardwalk section of the park. It's got a combination of 50s and beach theme, and it's well done. I passed Supreme Scream on my right, and Accelerator stood just ahead. Gone was the original coral track color, but the supports remain their original seafoam. Track on the lower portion of the layout is gunmetal gray, and it transitions from yellow to orange to red as the ride climbs higher, likely a nod to the flames painted on 50s hot rods. The skies were crystal clear, and the ride looked stunning. I entered the queue to find about a 15-minute wait. It winds beneath the full layout of the coaster, giving incredible visuals to build anticipation. The single train thunders just overhead with its distinctive old-school Intamin shudder. A lone purple 57 Chevy train was operating with no sign of the second one. It sports those trademark flames on its front fender, and it couldn't fit the theme better. The station is open air with a V-shaped roof, just like a retro gas station. Knott's nailed the look here, and they've got a soundtrack playing to boot. As would be expected on a low-capacity ride, rows were being assigned. Accelerator's train features 5 4-passenger cars, and on this ride, I was lucky enough to get placed in the back. I climbed aboard, buckled the seatbelt, and lowered Intamin's phenomenal T-bar restraint. I was seated next to a mother whose child and friend were riding ahead of us, and she was nervous. She said she'd ridden Incredicoaster at Disney's California Adventure and asked me if this launch was similar. I didn't have the heart to tell her we were about to experience one of the snappiest launches in the world, and that Incredicoaster has nothing on this ride. I simply said I didn't know, which isn't a lie because I haven't experienced the Disney Intamin LSM. We were all secure now, so why freak her out? We'd be at 82 miles an hour in 2.3 seconds once the operator pressed the button, and that launch starts from right here in the station. The catch car had long since rolled back and engaged. There's no slow rollout like King Ka or Storm Runner. We're already staged for this drag race, complete with a Christmas tree of lights that'll count down to green, then we'll go out with a bang.
Wow. Oh
accelerator lives up to its name as the hydraulics drop the clutch and the Chevy revs to redline down that short launch track. It's an unparalleled rush that led into a pitch up into the 205-foot top hat. The surrounding suburb is flat and mostly white, and you can see for miles before the airtime kicks in and your thighs contact the lap bar for a stellar pop of ejector airtime that endures through the vertical downward spire. You pull out gracefully and soar through an overbank to the left, then an opposing one to the right that gets surprisingly close to the top hat supports, creating an excellent head chopper. Upon leaving that second turnaround, the train descends gently into the downward sloping magnetic brake run. It's less than 30 seconds from launch to brake run, but the adrenaline from the launch and top hat carry through until you step off the ride. Accelerator is short, just like other Intamin hydraulic launch coasters, but it delivers a feeling of pure speed, awesome airtime on the top hat, and minimalistic restraints resulting in nothing short of pure joy, and I love all 30 seconds of it. I returned to the Midway after my first ride, and I was so glad to see this coaster's back in action. It's a compact roller coaster that delivers big thrills in a park without a lot of room for large-scale attractions. While I was tempted to hop right back in line, I wanted to check out the rest of the park. I turned the corner in the back of the boardwalk area and passed the closed Coast Rider. It's a mock Wild Mouse that opened since my last visit, and while I wanted to get the credit, that wasn't going to happen today. Directly across the boardwalk stood Hang Time. Opened in 2018, this Gerstlauer Infinity Coaster is the newest roller coaster at Knott's. It occupies the land formerly home to the Corkscrew, the first aerodynamics looping roller coaster which opened back in 1975. In 1990, Corkscrew was removed and relocated to Silverwood Theme Park in Idaho, and replaced by a Vekoma Boomerang which operated through 2017. In 2018, Hang Time opened, providing the park with a modern thrill coaster squeezed into the small available footprint. The color scheme completes the beach look of the area with teal track and sand-colored supports. It stands 150 feet tall and is technically considered a dive coaster. Like its counterparts from B&M, the train holds riders at the apex before they plummet downward in a 95-degree beyond vertical drop. Five subsequent inversions follow through 2,198 feet of track. The sign for Hang Time is placed above the ride's entrance on a surfboard. There's not much theming beyond that, but the headrests on the trains look like surfboard tips. The station is basic and open, and during my visit, two trains were running and the ride was a walk-on. The trains remind me of B&M Hypers minus the Zero car. They're made up of four cars seating four riders across with raised bucket seats and clamshell lap bars. I settled into the back row for my first ride, and we comfortably rolled straight ahead and onto the vertical lift hill. I'm not gonna lie, going straight up with just a lap bar made me feel more than a little uneasy. You just feel so much more open and exposed than with a shoulder harness. Good thing I had zipper pockets, or I would have been really nervous about losing my belongings. The train crests the top, and you stall at about a 45-degree angle. Then instead of a quick release like B&M does, you gradually roll forward, building more anticipation before the train tucks beneath itself for a snappy beyond vertical drop. There's some good airtime here in the back row, but it's over in the blink of an eye. The pullout happens below the Cobra roll, then you turn slightly right and ascend a kind of non-inverting dive loop before entering the ride's first inversion, a negative G stall loop. It's an Immelmann with the top stretched out to provide, you guessed it, hang time, and it's awesome. Next up is a super high corkscrew providing another dose of hang time at its apex before the ride reverses course in a cutback. The track levels out, then dips again, providing a nice airtime pop before a somewhat lackluster Cobra roll that turns you back around and into the brakes. So Hang Time will never be accused of false advertisement. It absolutely lives up to its name. It's a delightfully twisted roller coaster with some unique elements that rides like nothing else I rode during this trip. It's a smooth ride with very well-designed trains, giving riders an excellent free-flying sensation. It's a massive upgrade from the Boomerang I'd ridden last time I was here, and I think this coaster is a major win for Knott's. It rides well, and it looks phenomenal in the park. Bummer, I didn't have time to stick around and see the light package in full force after dark. I left Hang Time and meandered towards the front entrance to enter Ghost Town. This themed area makes up almost half the park on its southern end, and talk about immersive. So many parks have a western section, and this one is by far the best I've visited. It's a mix of relocated structures as well as replicas of landmarks from the Gold Rush era of the late 1800s. There's a barbecue restaurant and the famous Pan for Gold attraction, where you learn how to separate gold from sand using water. The entrance to Ghost Rider, the area's signature attraction, is right there, but I wanted to save this wood coaster for later. I took time to walk through and soak up the atmosphere, which is truly one of a kind, and in the very back corner of the park, I happened upon a roller coaster that was added since my last visit, Pony Express. It's a Zamperla moto coaster themed to riding a horse through the frontier. While the line was short, this ride only ran one train, so it took a handful of cycles before I climbed aboard. The seats and restraints on Pony Express are like nothing I've seen before. You climb onto a horseback, and it looks good. Then you lean forward in more of a racing motorbike position with your chest resting on a pad and a cover for your front legs. The restraint rises up from the horse's hindquarters and lightly contacts your back to keep you from standing up. It's unique, but it works. As we finished boarding and started rolling out to the launch track, the Calico Railroad steam train slowly passed to the left, navigating a very narrow pathway between the roller coaster and the back of the Walter Knott Theater. This train was no theme park replica. It used authentic period locomotives and rolling stock from the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad. Before the steam train completely passed, Pony Express did a giddy-up down the launch track and leisurely twisted through its short layout before returning to the station. It's a fun family coaster that looks great in the park. I left Ghost Town and continued my loop around the back of the park, passing the Knott's Berry Tales Shooting Dark Ride and crossing the train tracks in the center of the park where that classic steam train was waiting to take on its next passengers. My destination was Silver Bullet, the B&M inverted coaster that dominates the front of the park. I'd ridden this once on my last visit and didn't remember much about it. The thing that stuck out to me most on this day was how quiet it was. Early coasters from B&M feature a trademark roar created by vibration from the train rolling through the course. The sound is amplified by the large boxy spine of the track. B&M now fills the spine of their track with sand to mitigate this, but I know what those coasters sound like, and Silver Bullet is quieter. Other than the screams from riders, the most noticeable sound comes from the rattle of the train's wheel cowlings as they run the track. While I can't confirm, I've read that this was accomplished by filling the ride's support with sand in addition to the track work. With Knott's located in a dense residential area, noise mitigation is a priority for the park, and this coaster's whisper-quiet ride was a unique experience. Silver Bullet opened in 2004, a relative latecomer to the invert game. Batman the Ride opened 10 years earlier at Six Flags Magic Mountain, but Cedar Fair was going much bigger with this installation. The coaster wars were in full effect at this time, and it was the third major roller coaster added to the park within 6 years, following Ghost Rider and Accelerator. The Southern California theme park market is flush with competition, and Cedar Fair wanted to put Knott's on the map for thrill seekers as well as families. You enter the queue for this coaster next to a lagoon with most of its layout above it. The color scheme is a strange choice. Silver Bullet has red and yellow track with white supports. No silver here. The queue and station are pretty bare bones theming-wise, but they fit the Ghost Town motif. This probably has the best capacity in the park, and I walked right on board for a back row ride. You turn right out of the station and begin the climb to 146 feet with Fiesta Village straight ahead. Space constraints make this layout a bit quirky. It reminded me a bit of Great Bear at Hershey Park. The first quirk is probably the tamest first drop on a major thrill coaster I've ridden. It's very gradual and really just serves to build up speed for the rest of the elements. First up is a vertical loop, and it's every bit as forceful as I would expect on a B&M. Then comes quirk number 2, which is a gnarly overbank turn to the left to set up for inversions 2 and 3, that cobra roll right by the entrance. This is a really unique sequence, and I liked it. You then exit the cobra roll and head straight into a 0G roll, followed by a 540-degree left-hand helix, 2 snappy corkscrews, and a tight upward helix over the water leading into the final brakes. Silver Bullet is a good coaster despite its odd layout. I like the overbank turn and the whippy corkscrews. It's still nice and smooth, but overall it's not that memorable, which is probably why my first ride back in 06 didn't stick with me. It's still a high-capacity crowd pleaser, which is a good fit for Knott's. By this time I was getting hungry. While I would have loved to get the full chicken dinner experience, I didn't have a ton of time, so I opted for the new Casa California in Fiesta Village. If you know me, you know that I could eat Chipotle every day of the week and be perfectly happy, and my carne asada burrito bowl was everything I could ask for. Fresh and tasty. Now, this area of the park just reopened after a renovation, and it looks stunning. It's chock full of Mexican-inspired archways and tile work, and while I don't remember what it looked like before, the current look gets 5 stars. This could be considered the park's boardwalk midway-type area with a carousel, several flat rides and food options, and a couple of roller coasters. Jaguar with an exclamation point is a Zero Tivoli family coaster with super-long 15-car trains that wind their way around a Mayan temple. I'd gotten the credit on my last visit, and I didn't feel a need to ride it again. The other coaster is Montezuma's Revenge, a Schwarzkopf shuttle looper. It's been closed since 2022 for refurbishment. I heard that the flywheel launch was going to be replaced with LSMs with a 2023 opening date. While that didn't happen, immediately prior to this recording, Knott's released a new promo video announcing that the new Montezuma will open in 2025. It'll be cool to see what they end up doing to this ride, and I'm glad it isn't being removed. Feeling satisfied with my lunch, I walked back through Ghost Town to check out the refreshed wildest wooden coaster in the West. Ghost Rider opened in 1998 to rave reviews. While the park had just been acquired by Cedar Fair, the Knott family had commissioned its design and development prior to the sale, making the standout attraction the final contribution to their legacy. The massive structure dominates the view when entering the park as it crosses Grand Avenue. California earthquake building codes require the use of substantially more lumber than a typical wood coaster, making it all the more impressive. After I last rode, Ghost Rider steadily became rougher and almost unrideable, prompting Knott's to close it and contract GCI to come in and completely retract the ride. The conversion included reprofiling some parts of the layout, replacing the original PTCs with Millennium Flyers, removing the mid-course brake run, and adding Brazilian Ipe to high-stress areas of the track. This exotic hardwood is said to last longer than traditional southern yellow pine. The entrance to Ghost Rider is located in the heart of Ghost Town, right next to Pan for Gold. The first part of the line travels through a spooky tunnel resembling a mine shaft before emerging into a large, minimally themed wooden queue house with two stories filled with switchbacks. It's routinely got the longest wait in the park due to popularity and low capacity. On this quiet Monday, I still waited at least 30 minutes despite two train ops. Once I arrived in the station, I selected the back row, lowered the lap bar, and prepared to head out on this revered wood coaster. The train gently leaves the station and turns around with some decent laterals before engaging the lift. Its height is only 118 feet, yet the layout features 4,533 feet of track and a ride duration of 2 minutes and 40 seconds. Clacking upward, you get a great view of the Soak City Water Park and the surrounding area. At the top, a roof appears over the first drop. This was added to the ride to prevent screams from riders from disturbing the neighbors, and while it would have been cool to have an unobstructed view cresting the top, the enclosed feeling creates a unique visual as well. The first drop is fine, though it's nothing special. At the bottom, you turn pretty sharply to the left and head into the first hill, a large camelback providing sustained floater airtime. Then the laterals come on strong on the first turnaround as the track redirects you to the left. You drop back through the structure of that camelback with beams flying overhead, emerge back into the sunlight, and turn right to pass the first drop. You dive down again, passing through the lift trusses, and rise up into the unbanked hairpin. After a ferocious dose of laterals on this tight turnaround above the station, you pass over what used to be the mid-course, but no brakes are present. The train still has a good head of steam on, and the back row gets ripped down what is quite aptly named the drop. And what a drop it is! It's the standout moment on the ride, and the airtime is abrupt and forceful. The remainder of the layout takes place completely within the structure, where you face quick ejector airtime pops combined with stellar laterals. It's a relentless assault on your senses as you're flung through constant direction changes seemingly inches from the surrounding structure. It's epic. Ghost Rider's finale is 540 degrees of unbanked aggression, leaving you pinned to the left for an eternity. You swiftly exit the helix and pop over a final bunny hill before entering the brakes. After my hands-up ride, the lap bar had come down a few clicks, an issue common to Millennium Flyers, but after that first ride, I was blown away. It's action-packed from start to finish, and the second half is the star of the show. The drop sets up a sequence of perfectly blended elements that feel completely out of control as you zip through tunnels of timber. There's so much airtime, and this ride seems to go on forever. Plus, it's as smooth as can be. Ghost Rider is 100% an elite roller coaster, and a contender for my number one wood. It's an absolute rush. I set back out into the park to ride Accelerator and Hang Time again. Short waits meant I got my fill of those two coasters. I finished the day with a second back row ride on Ghost Rider, and this one was a little extra special. I was sitting in the back row with a mother and her young son right ahead of me. She couldn't fit safely in the train and wasn't able to ride. The boy still wanted to ride, and they asked if he would feel better sitting next to me, which he did. I think his name was Joey, and he was 7 years old. I asked him what other coasters he'd ridden as we headed up the lift. The biggest one was Jaguar, so this was going to be a major step up for him. We experienced Ghost Rider at sunset, and it was absolutely hauling through the course. At the end, after the gut-busting final helix, I asked him what he thought, and he loved it. I gotta give Joey props because I never would have ridden something like this at his age, and I never would have done it sitting next to a stranger. There's a kid who's going somewhere. I was so focused on getting Joey back to his mother on the exit platform that I almost left the station without grabbing my belongings from the bin. It was a great way to end my afternoon at Knott's, and as I made my way out of the park through Ghost Town, I got back to thinking about the age-old debate, quality versus quantity. The attention to detail and loving care put into this park over the years shows in every part of the experience. It may occupy a landlocked city block, but once you pass through the gate, you're immersed in a park with a storied history that is also still fresh. They've got a solid collection of roller coasters, including two great ones in Ghost Rider and Accelerator, but it's the vibe here that sets it apart. I had a blast at Six Flags Magic Mountain, but if I had to choose between the two for one park day, Knott's would win hands down. It's got that X factor that you can't measure by counting coasters or acres, and if you've been here, you know what I mean. Now if that long-rumored Giga or Hyper ever got added, this park would be next level. I headed to my car and battled traffic on my way back to LAX. I decided to return my rental that night so I would have one less thing to do in the morning, and walk the couple of blocks to the Sheraton Gateway right by the airport. It had been a whirlwind few days, but I had a great time. And with a new Intamin coming to Universal next year, and hopefully something big coming to Magic Mountain, there's a good chance I'll be back this way soon. This was also my last trip for 2023, and what a year it was. My coaster count currently stands at 195, and I've got big plans for 2024. I last did a top 10 list back in episode 7 at the end of my 2022 road trip that really kicked off this podcast, and with all the new rides I've been on since then, I now feel I've ridden enough coasters to put together a top 25. Join me for the next episode when I count down my top 25 roller coasters to date and reveal my plans for this year's road trip, 2 full weeks with nothing but park hopping. The season 2 finale is coming up next time on Coaster Redux. That's a wrap for this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help me out by reviewing, sharing, and subscribing. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Coaster Redux.
Thank you for listening to Coaster Redux. Until next time, enjoy the ride.